This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Last week, the agency recorded a huge surge in the numbers of people fleeing Ituri, with more than 22,000 Congolese crossing Lake Albert to Uganda.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva on the growing refugee crisis in the DRC. Details coming up. Also, President Jacob Zuma's end is being engineered by his African National Congress, the very organization for which he spent a decade in prison under the apartheid government. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story, South Africa's ruling party has recalled its more visible member, President Jacob Zuma, after more than a week of closed-door negotiations aimed at persuading the unpopular, scandal-plagued leader to step aside quietly, but the president has yet to respond with his resignation. The situation, South Africans say, is perplexing and frustrating and threatens the reputation of the powerful, vulnerable party that has dominated politics since the end of apartheid. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's ruling party has officially decided to recall President Jacob Zuma, officials said Tuesday. African National Congress Secretary General Ace Magashule said the party's top brass reached a collective, not a unanimous, decision in the wee hours of Tuesday after a 13-hour meeting. Magashule said talks are ongoing, but the party expects the president to comply with the executive committee's request and step aside.
Is there still room for negotiation? Yes, we are a political party which wants to resolve matters politically. And if there is that space, and President Jacob Zuma wants to further engage us, we'll do so. But I think the decision of the National Executive Committee is now final. Recall President Jacob Zuma. So that decision can change.
However, Zuma has no legal obligation to resign and has not indicated he will do so. The president, an ANC member since the age of 17, back when the party was banned under South Africa's apartheid government, has long described himself as a loyal member of a party that prides itself on unity and discipline. But he has resisted more than a week's worth of intense pressure from the party to step down. Just outside ANC headquarters in downtown Johannesburg, ordinary South Africans said they want to see the end of Zuma, who for years has been mired in ever deeper corruption scandals. Those make a quiet retirement unlikely for Zuma. He could face numerous investigations, including a pending case that includes 783 charges of corruption. Voter Patience Luditi, who is 45, said she had run out of, well, patience with the president. She hails from a small town in the Free State province and says she blames Zuma for her town's lack of development.
I don't want to see Jacob Zuma. I don't like this man. We are suffering. It's enough. It's enough.
Magashule and ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa met with Zuma early Tuesday. Magashule said Zuma asked for 3 to 6 months to complete the job, but said the party felt that was too long given his sinking approval ratings as critical elections approach next year. He said the party did not give Zuma a deadline to tender his resignation, but said they expected a quick turnaround.
So we are expecting the president to respond tomorrow. I'm sure tomorrow the president will respond. Tomorrow. There's no deadline. Tomorrow the president will respond.
Until tomorrow, then. Or maybe the tomorrow after that. South Africa waits. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Jacob Zuma, who sat by Nelson Mandela's side as they negotiated the end of South Africa's apartheid regime, went on to become the most divisive leader in the nation's short democratic history. The 75-year-old's end is being engineered by his African National Congress, the very organization for which he spent a decade in prison under the apartheid government. The charismatic Zuma made his way up the political ladder, becoming deputy president in 1999. Zuma, who never had any formal schooling, became president a decade later, riding a populist wave. But his presidency was plagued by scandals, which include a rape trial and hundreds of corruption allegations. The chorus against Zuma began to grow after a 2013 investigation uncovered that he used about $23 million in government funds to upgrade his rural residence. The president lost support from voters, and the ANC began to see him as a liability ahead of next year's elections. In December, the ANC chose Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa to be the party chief. The president had backed Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, former health minister and chairwoman of the African Union, and one of his former wives, to succeed him at the helm. Last month, ANC leaders began to push for his resignation, hoping to have time to rebuild support before the elections. Cameroonian authorities continue to search for a senior regional official kidnapped Sunday by suspected separatist militants in the country's English-speaking northwest. The abduction followed the killings of three gendarmes that same day amid violence in other Anglophone towns as officials tried to celebrate National Youth Day. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the latest from the town of Batibo in northwestern Cameroon.
God, wherever he is, let him be safe. In the hands of his enemies, let his enemies become his
this
friends.
This is the voice whatever of Julien Namata, of him, wife of the most senior government official in the Batibo subdivision of Cameroon's English-speaking Northwest. She prays for the safe return of her husband, Joseph Namata. She says he was taken from their residence on Sunday as he was getting set to go to the town's ceremonial ground and preside over activities marking Cameroon's 52nd annual National Youth Day.
At about 8 o'clock in the morning, we heard gunshots, and I rushed to the room to alert him. When I got to the room, he was not there. I asked the gendarmes who were around the house. They told me he went out with his driver.
Authorities suspect that armed men were able to get Namata into his car without alerting his protection detail. The vehicle was later found burned. Joseph Namata has not been seen since. Absalom Monono Woloa is senior divisional officer of the Momo Division, where the subdivision of Batibo is located.
We've organized a search with all the security forces that are at our disposal and the reinforcement that the governor and the regional security had sent to us to organize the search. And we want to be grateful to the population that has already started indicating to us and providing us with their assistance in the search.
However, fearing a roundup by security forces, hundreds of youths have also reportedly fled the town. Woloa called on them to return. Government officials and lawmakers in Cameroon's two English-speaking zones have faced intimidation and attack in the past year. This is the first kidnapping of an administrative official. What started as a strike by Anglophone lawyers and teachers in November 2016 degenerated as it was overtaken by separatist groups demanding full independence for the country's Anglophone minority. Violence has escalated amid a government crackdown. The detention of 47 separatist leaders arrested and extradited from neighboring Nigeria last month has thrown oil on the fire. Armed separatist groups warned on social media that Cameroon should not attempt to celebrate National Youth Day February 11th in the English-speaking regions. Separatists have declared the Northwest and Southwest regions a breakaway state they call Ambazonia. Local officials, protected by security forces, went ahead with the celebrations. Cameroon's Defense Minister, Joseph Betty Asomo, said three gendarmes deployed to maintain peace in the southwestern town of Kembong were, in his words, cold-bloodedly assassinated by terrorists that same February 11. More than 24 policemen, gendarmes and soldiers have lost their lives amid the unrest in the Anglophone regions, according to the defense minister. He added that hundreds of the separatists have either been killed or arrested, a figure that VOA could not immediately and independently verify. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Batibu, Cameroon.
International human rights groups say Egypt's elections next month will not be free nor fair. 14 groups today issued a joint statement saying the government of President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has suppressed dissent and basic freedoms. The groups, which including Human Rights Watch and the International Commission of Jurists, say the government has jailed potential candidates or intimidated their supporters so they dropped out of the race. Al-Sisi has only one rival in the elections, Musa Mustafa Musa, who previously had supported Sisi's candidacy. Al-Sisi came to power after ousting elected President Mohamed Morsi, whose year in office was divisive. He defends his government's actions by saying it is fighting the threat of terrorism. Also today, police took Egypt's former anti-corruption chief into custody. Hisham Ganina is supporter of jailed presidential candidate Sami Anan. Ganina recently said that there are documents that could be incriminating to the government. He said they would be released if Sami Anan was killed in prison. The UN Refugee Agency reports thousands of people are taking deadly flight as ethnic violence grows in Democratic Republic of Congo's Ituri province. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Some people are losing their lives in their desperation to escape the increasingly bitter conflict between the Hima and Lendu ethnic groups in DRC's Ituri province. The UN Refugee Agency reports four Congolese refugees seeking safety in Uganda have drowned after their boat capsized on Lake Albert 2 days ago. The UNHCR says several days prior to this tragedy, two other refugees died at the DRC shores of Lake Albert, where thousands of people are waiting to cross. Last week, the agency recorded a huge surge in the numbers of people fleeing Ituri, with more than 22,000 Congolese crossing Lake Albert to Uganda. This brings the total number of new arrivals in Uganda since the beginning of the year to 34,000. UNHCR spokesman Babar Baloche calls this very alarming. He tells VOA this is the biggest exodus of refugees from Ituri for two decades. That is when 400,000 people were displaced and tens of thousands were killed in clashes between the Hima and Lendu over cattle and grazing rights.
We remain worried, as you've seen, what we have seen in the last weeks, around, on average, 3,000 people fleeing per day, and this could still go on as there are reports of thousands of others being stranded on the shores of Lake Albert inside DRC.
Baloche says refugees recount gruesome stories of growing attacks against civilians in Ituri province, as well as killings and destruction of private property. He says UNHCR has received many reports of civilians being hacked to death and killed with arrows. Baloche says arriving refugees are in great need of shelter, food, and other vital support. He says new settlements must be built, and it is critical for refugees to receive psychological counseling to help them overcome their trauma. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
19 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. For more information on how Ugandan officials are handling the surge in the number of new Democratic Republic of Congo refugees in Uganda, we go to Catherine Nambi, who has this report from Kampala.
For the past 2.5 months, Ugandan authorities and refugee agencies have been registering daily arrivals of new refugees from Democratic Republic of Congo. The refugees who are fleeing violence in DRC's Ituri province are entering Uganda through different border points, while others are making risky journeys across Lake Albert. The majority of the refugees reportedly entered Uganda through Nteko and Bunagana border points in Kisoro district. Smaller numbers crossed through Ishasha, Cheshero, and Butogota border points in Kanungu, Mpondwe in Kasese, while others use Lake Albert in Bulisa district. Some refugees have also been received in Ntoroko, Bundibugyo, and Kasese districts, among others. David Okor is the area chairperson of Kanara Town Council in Ntoroko district, where refugees have found shelter.
The last 3 days we've been receiving them in different order. Some could come in the morning and the night. And mainly women and children, with some old men and the sick men.
Edward Baluku is a local leader in Bubandi Town Council in Bundibugyo district. He said his area has been overwhelmed by the new refugee arrivals.
We are requesting the Red Cross and the UN to come and interview in this program. But they were coming in big number. We divided in two groups. One, we put them in Busunga Market. Then the others, we send them to Ubani Primary School. Then Ubani Primary School, even where we are talking now, it is full up. So we want to take them back to extend them to Ubani Sub-County headquarters.
Robert Kwesiga is the Secretary General, Uganda Red Cross Society. He says refugee aid agencies are overstretched by the different crossing points used by the Congolese refugees.
The coming in of these people itself is a challenge because they are coming from different border points, stretching from Chisoro up to Western Nile. So you have people coming crossing through Lake Albert. So these are various border crossings, and this becomes a big burden to the actors, whether it is government, whether it is UNHCR, and all of us humanitarian actors, because then you are spread thin. And then how do you provide for all these people from these different border point crossings and ensure that they are given the basics and also to make sure that they are taken to the refugee settlements?
Kwesiga says the new displacements are facing unmet vital humanitarian needs, including food, other basic relief items, and social amenities.
How bad the situation is may not necessarily be the numbers. Normally, it is about the resources to make sure that when these refugees come into the country, the mechanisms to make them live like any other human being, that's where the challenge is. In any emergency situation, what is very critical is, do these people have water? Are there sanitation facilities? Because short of that, then outbreak of diseases. Food comes next in line, but also the whole question of shelter, the whole question of security, but also the protection of the vulnerable, the women and the children.
A report by the UN refugee body, UNHCR, indicates that the arrival rate has sharply increased during the reporting period, with a daily average of 568 people. The new arrivals through Kisoro, Kanungu and Kasese are taken to Chakatu settlement, while those entering through Lake Albert are taken to Changwali settlement. UNHCR estimates 60,000 expected new arrivals from DRC this year. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Kenya's Attorney General Githu Muigai has resigned. President Uhuru Kenyatta announced the resignation today. No reason was given. Muigai has served as Attorney General since 2011. He is well known for defending Kenyatta and others in the government before the International Court of Justice. Muigai declared last year that opposition leader Raila Odinga's plan to be sworn in as the people's president was treasonous. In the past several weeks, the Kenyan government's adherence to the rule of law has been questioned. It defied court orders to allow broadcasters back on the air after they were cut off to keep them from showing Odinga's unofficial swearing-in. In addition, critics say the government defied the law in cracking down on opposition figures involved in Odinga's swearing-in. Kenyatta has nominated Paul Kiara Karika, the president of the Court of Appeal, to replace Muigai. Malawi's government has suspended the export of maize and all maize products amid fears of an impending food shortage. The country is currently affected with twin problems of drought and fall army worms, which have destroyed large areas of crop fields. The ban comes 4 months after the government lifted an export ban it imposed 3 years ago. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi government also banned maize exports in 2015 after El Nino-induced drought and flooding left half of the country's population dependent on food aid. But the government lifted the ban last October following a surplus maize harvest. This is what President Peter Mutharika said when he lifted the ban.
I'm convinced that there's no danger now. My concern was always, but I was not going to allow the export of maize till I was sure that there will be enough maize in this country. I'm now convinced that that technically has been reached.
But the latest report on this year's national harvest paints a gloomy picture, prompting a new ban on maize exports. A Minister of Agriculture report says 3.4 million people are likely to face food shortages this year because of the long dry spell and four armyworms. It says the dry spell has destroyed 580,000 hectares of crops, while armyworms have damaged 270,000 hectares. A crop estimate by the Famine Early Warning System Network also predicts a low crop harvest for Malawi this year. Farmers, however, says the export ban will only deprive them of income they would earn from selling surplus maize outside the country. The Farmers Union of Malawi said in a statement that the maize prices in the eastern region of Africa range from $300 to $700 per metric ton. That is triple the local market price. Alfred Kavichila Banda is the president of Farmers Union of Malawi.
I don't think we are going to benefit anything, because if they have suspended the export itself, they need to raise the price of maize in the country so much so that a farmer has to get something at the end of the day.
He says that the prices of fertilizers and other farm inputs are still high, and the ban means farmers will not earn enough to prepare for the next growing season. But the government says the ban seeks to ensure food security in the country. Maize traders have increased their prices in apparent move to maintain the profits they would earn through exports. Andrea Longwe is the maize trader in Blantyre. He says he used to sell 50 kilograms of maize at 5,000 kwacha per bag, but now he has raised it to 7,500 kwacha because he will not have a chance to sell his maize outside the country, where he used to fetch double his earlier prices. Felix Jumbe is the chairperson for Alliance for Commodity Trade in East and Southern Africa. He says although higher prices are a strain for local consumers, they will encourage farmers to grow more maize.
That's good for the farmers. But what we are looking at is, I think if the prices should be set like the way they were a year before, 2015, 2016, where maize prices were at 250. You know, it attracted the farmers or even those who were in tobacco to go into maize production.
The government has asked the farmers not to panic. It says it will continue to monitor the crop status until the harvest period, when it will reconsider the maize export ban. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa,
We'll speak with Bobby Wine, the outspoken Ugandan member of parliament, is a businessman, activist, humanitarian, and musician. His lyrics often advocate for Uganda's struggling and poor. Bobby Wine joins host Shaka Sali to discuss his role as an artist in African politics.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.